place is the most important thing to know, because they're the enemy. Those are the things which are causing all the trouble. And they come from avijja, the ignorance. Avijja is like a distortion within one, which puts everything in the wrong light. It twists everything around. And the kilesas are what come from this avijja. So these kilesas are part of oneself. It's said that there's, in the heart there is Dhamma, and there's kilesas. And the two fight each other. And when we think or do anything, we do it as though I am doing it, like that. But that I there has got a lot of kilesas all the time. Because of these kilesas, the actions are not pure. And the ideas are not pure either, because the kilesas are there. Even in good things, they're still not pure. They're good things, but good things are what give good results. But the actions are not in a sense pure. Because they're not pure, they lead to results which are impure also. Now, when one wants the world, one wants to go to the world, one wants to succeed in the world, what is this success? It's after all loka dhamma. These four loka dhamma. Yeah. It's these things that everybody wants in the world. See, wanting to display self. What is this self that we want to display? What is the thing we want to raise up all the time and display? If one looks, one sees it's a bit of a, it's an imposter. It's something that pretends or makes out that it is what in fact it's not. It's making out that it's the sort of essence, it's the essence of one's nature. But in point of fact it's not, it's a composition. It's composed of five khandhas: body, feeling, memory, thought, consciousness. So it's a composition of these things. And these things give the idea and feeling of there being some self. And when there's self, then we relate everything to self. There's a relationship of this and that all the time. We have this relationship. And with this relationship, then, because we want to boost the self, we want to make sure that the self is better than what's out there. And so we want to raise it up in good ways or bad ways, however it may be. And the kilesas get into it, and they then work on it, make one think in all sorts of directions to try and just do just that. And if one looks at what the result of that's going to be, first of all, the first result obviously is distraction. The mind's going to be distracted by the world, all sorts of things. It's going to have endless pursuits and things too that it has to deal with. Business, position, well, you know what it means. All the sort of mess of the world. And in this mess of the world, what's going to happen to one's chitta? What's going to happen to one's kilesas? It's just food for the kilesas. Feeding them the whole time. Just strengthening them. Whereas the Dhamma is going in the opposite direction. In Dhamma, it isn't that we destroy the self. We come to see that that self is something of a non-entity. It's not that there's any destruction of it, because there's nothing much there to destroy. So it's rather like a shadow. And if you don't get rid of a self, you come down to what the situation really is. Whereas some people say, you know, well, I don't want to get rid of myself. In fact, there's nothing there to get rid of. It's just the one coming to understand. Also, fundamentally, within us, there is the situation of Nibbana. There's the Buddha nature, if you like, there within us. It must be there. If it wasn't there, we couldn't get to it. Because it's not something that can arise and cease. If anything arises, it must cease. So it means that Buddha nature must be there within us all the time. And this is the nature of Dhamma. This is the Dhamma in the heart. And there's always this pull in that direction. But the pull is not like the pull of the kilesas. It's not like the pull of the child who must have a sweet just now. He must have a toffee just now, you know. And that's the pull of the kilesas. Whereas the pull of Dhamma is a longing to get back to something we know is real. And it's a longing to get back to it's really a longing to go home. To go home in the true way. Which means that at home we're in a position where everything's just right. We can put our feet up and forget it. There's no problems, no trouble, nothing at all. We just feel everything familiar. One can describe it like that. There's a term in Thai, birth bound, which means sort of the feeling of being back home. And this is the thing which comes up more in the barn. It's the returning home. Where, I mean, sure, like one's relatives know one, they know one's faults and they know one's virtues, and they accept them as they are. And they don't criticize. I mean, this isn't always the case in normal life, I know. But this is the sort of ideal. there's always that pull, pulling them in that direction. It's a very gentle pull. It's not that it's like the kilesas which grab hold of one. Fundamentally, everybody wants that situation. And they know it's there, but they can't define it.
You defined it very well. It's very helpful.
It's not a real definition there. All it is just a suggestion of the direction. Because the real thing is the unconditioned. Now, the unconditioned is something that nobody can imagine, except somebody who's got there. Because it's a state without any conditions, which means there are no definitions, no boundaries, no limits, total freedom. But we can't understand what total freedom means. Because you can't describe it, whatever description one gives, it's a makeshift. Anything like wanting friends means that we feel a certain inadequacy in oneself. There's something missing there. And you want something to measure yourself against. Want something to relate to, measure oneself. When the citta becomes competent in itself, then there's no need to measure it. One knows it's right. And friends, all right, one has friends then, but there's no attachment, no wanting. The wanting goes out of it. That's competence of the citta that's required inside. And that's where the practice needs. One takes up Dhamma. The friends that one used to have, in large part, they just go away and have no contact with them. Mm-hmm. But one gets other friends who are like-minded. They're also interested in Dhamma. And, really speaking, they're probably better friends. In Buddhism, the having of true friends is very valuable. So a true friend usually means by someone like Tamachana, the Achana, who one can rely on 100%.
Kalyanamitra.
Yeah, Kalyanamitra. That's the thing that really matters. And if you've got a true friend there, that's very valuable. One feels confidence, sort of, well, whatever I say to him, whatever I tell him, I know he won't take it wrong. He may scold me for it, but he won't take it in the wrong way. he won't go wrong.
That's the same in the Buddha says that if you find a Kalyanamitra, you can go with him. But if there's no Kalyana, it would be just go alone.
Well, going on one's own doesn't necessarily mean travelling. It means inside. Far better being on one's own, being one's own guide there, than relying on false teachers. Mm-hmm. Very careful false teachers. There are some who are who have quite an understanding, and they're not false, and they can help quite a lot. Although they haven't got the full way, and there they're quite useful. But there are others who go the wrong way. The bhikkhus often go together, two or three of them to a place. And if they're going out in the forest, or in the hills and forests, they often go together, but they look on each other as equals, usually. Mm. There's probably one who's a bit more up, burn. You can burn. There's one like that, but the others, they look on themselves, they need more of the equal. And they can then practice their way individually. Often if they go to a place and stay there, they won't stay together. They'll go a little distance apart.
Earlier you talked about the self wanting to make sure it's better than others.
Yeah.
How do you give that up? That's something I have a hard time with. I mean, do you have a hint?
The only way is to get to know oneself. Try and look for the motive. Why do you want that? Wherever we want something, there's an inadequacy. There's something missing. And even the things that we need, we want something, but we only want it because it's lacking. So if one wants self to be better than others, or higher than others, or anything of that sort, there's something lacking in the self that it wants. So. What is it that it wants? And one should ask themselves that. Because, after all, when there's wanting, there's something lacking. When there's something lacking, one strives to get that, to perfect it, to attain it, whatever it is. And in the striving, there's often a lot of hard work, trouble, all sorts of things come up. And if it's something that's really valuable, then it's worth it. But if it's not, it's just a lot of worthless suffering. So. And the striving in the world for position, wealth, what have you, all these things, what is the value of it really? When you look at it, the person strives for wealth, they work hard, businessman, and they put everything into it. By the time they're 55, they're worn out, and they die of heart failure, and they throw the whole lot away. What's the worth of it? If one gets to a high position, much the same is true. Also. And then you retire and you're no longer in a high position. And it doesn't help at all. I've known business people who they've become very high in their business, then they retire and they don't know what to do. They're lost. Because they've been the big boss, telling everybody, go here, do that, telephone's ringing all the time. Then they retire, and they're just sitting back home in an armchair and don't know what to do. Pretty rough. In other words, what they've built up is something which is it's like a shadow, something like cloud. It's not real. It's effective just for a time. And it's not something that's real inside himself. One time I thought of people who are married. Are they really happy? I thought of the people I knew. I couldn't find one pair whom I could say was really happy. Always, you get something that's wrong there. It's not right. It doesn't fit together. And then I found, when I was in England as a vicar, I had quite a lot of people coming to see me, and so they brought problems and things like that. And somebody comes along, and they seem to be happy, they seem to have plenty of, they're seem to be wealthy enough, all good, got a good family and so on. And then they talk to you and it all comes out. And the discontent, the trouble, the arguments they get into at home, and all sorts of things. And you find, there's no happiness.
I have two examples, two couples, another married now, I've lived with them in the same house for, and I know about them. They're very happy. But they're rooted in Denmark. But,
there are happy people. But it's rarity. I mean, in the suttas, there's a couple, I can't remember the names now, who had been husband and wife for 99 lives, I think, or something like that. They were well suited to each other.
Is it possible to follow Dhamma and be married at the same time?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Good. One can follow Dhamma in any pursuit as long as it's not actually a kusala, a bad pursuit. You can follow Dhamma. Definitely there's no reason why not. In fact, if one really follows Dhamma, marriage starts going better. I've had examples of this. The thing is, whether one's husband or wife does it or not, for oneself, one should try and develop Dhamma in oneself, in one's heart. Now, if one can develop calm in oneself and get one's Dhamma down in the heart here and keep one's chitta inside, you find it can gain strength gradually. And you find that everything in marriage starts going more smoothly. Things go better. And everything starts evening out, so to speak. All these old sharp points and these rocky bits start gradually getting less.
But don't you have to break off at a certain point? It's not that teaching. Because of your tanha, raga tanha.
No, I mean, the thing is that raga tanha will probably be reduced. That's probably so. But I mean, the sokapana has still got raga tanha.
Mm.
It's not gone. Not gone. So the sakadana hasn't gone. There was one woman who came. She had a lot of problems with family, and she was very upset about it. I talked to them, and I told her the only thing what can do is to get your chitta right inside. If you get yourself right inside, it'll put things right outside. And I told her to do the buddho practice, And I said you've got to do it, otherwise things will go all wrong, it will get worse and worse. And she took this and went away and did it. And she managed to do it and succeeded. And she got calm, and then later she got down to the heart. And nowadays she keeps her chitta there most of the time. And everything smooths out completely.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that marriage and the way it goes together, but it's better without, or?
Probably it's better on one's own. Firstly, because the problems in marriage are not small. And I mean, although you do get people who are compatible, not so often. After all, two people who are attracted to one another, why are they attracted? One of the prime reasons is that the other person has got what oneself is lacking. Because of that, you'll get two people who are, get married because they're completely opposite characters. That's no way to get on together.
Except you have Dhamma, a lot of Dhamma already.
You have to have a lot there, because everything they see from different points of view. I mean, a greedy character, for instance, would tend to marry somebody who's predominantly strong in hate. Because they complement each other like that. But the thing is that because they're not a unity, in fact they go against each other. That's what tends to happen. I mean, the greedy person will understand things in one way, the person with hate will understand them in a quite different way. They're quite different characters. And this is what makes a lot of trouble. Lakshya, it's a difficult thing to explain, Lakshya. Lakshya means it's a principle in the heart. Luck is a principle, so it means literally luck means a sort of stake, post stuck in the ground, an anchor, something you would tie a buffalo to. But that's that sort of literal meaning, luck. But luck chai means it's some firm principle in one's heart. It means Dhamma in the heart. And when we've got that in the heart, then whatever happens, one can refer to it and get the understanding of it. It's sort of like the Philosopher's Stone, which they're said to have in the ancient days. One who's got the Philosopher's Stone, he can sort of use this and it can help him reassess the body. It's interesting, people get very upset when there's disasters in the world or some terrible thing happens, you know, and lots of people die. But we don't think what the real situation is, because the number of people who die in this world every day is something like 250,000. I mean, one thinks of that, 250,000 every day. And no one even sees some disaster, and then, not so much. And people get very upset by disasters, and they take great notice of them. But I mean, in the village where two people have died just recently, it's relatively tier. And somebody else last night, I don't know who it was. I mean, when one's young or old, one can die. The only thing is, when one's old, one knows that there's a greater probability of not lasting very long. When one's young, there's a much more probability of lasting.
Well, no one knows who's going to die first.
Like that French woman who was 119 years old, and somebody asked her, well, what do you think of the future? She said, I expect it to be brief. And short. One has to give up is that one who wants to give it up.
But doesn't Tanatan say, he says, like, you have to give up milk, it's longer than how, okay?
Well, those are external things which might tend to induce that. They're not rather than how. They're not. But they tend to induce it. They produce bodily conditions which tend to arouse rather than that. Because of that, the Tantan says it's probably better to watch out for it anyway. He doesn't say don't take it. But he says if you find it does that, then be careful. Keep a watch out.
And the other would be Kilesa?
That's
saying I have to give it up.
Well, when one thinks, I have to give it up, this is, when saying that, I have to give it up, I am doing something. I think that I must give it up. We can't work that way. That one who wants to give it up can't give anything up. I mean, if it gives up, it gives it up by violence. And it isn't really giving up at all.
Mm.
All one can do is go on training, learning the way, and seeing the danger of it until the penny drops, until one understands. And then the giving up comes of itself. There's no, in fact, there isn't any giving up. It's, the whole thing just becomes void.
I can see that, but, you know, but seeing that on the way, you know, and then seeing myself, okay, I'm here. To over there, I might go into this relationship.
Mm.
That's the question.
The thing is, what one can do is if one finds any tendency of rather turn hard on that, one can search and think, what am I doing wrong? Let's see, this is coming up. And one can then avoid that. But the thing is, you can't just get rid of the raga tanha like that. What one can do is to sort of see, are my thoughts wrong? Am I doing something which is wrong? That's all one can do. You can't really just give up raga tanha like that. In fact, giving up is in so many things, it's something one can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Just won't keep.
That's
right. Well, it's sexy, sexual craving.
So you know it's a hassle.
It's the underlying thing, and the thing is, it's one of the most important factors of the loss of the kilesas, because this is not merely an overt sex like that, but hundreds of other things that come in. Nearly all the violence in the world is due to this. Just this one factor, rather than that. Now, you look at Yugoslavia. What's behind that is fundamentally rather than that. Because that doesn't happen without something in the hearts of people. And that's the major factor that's driving it on at all times. You see it with these two. These chickens. And what makes the cockerels fight together? Just that. Oh, it's one of the most important of the factors. And the things that spring from it are enormous. The sorts of activities which are not good. Most surprising things sometimes. I realize is when you see it, what's behind it. And you realize it's one one should get to know very well and understand. Because it's very dangerous in the world. Coming from America, you should be able to see that quite easily. It displayed so much in all its forms in America, in the television, radio, videos a lot.
But one has to give up following rather than
one has to observe in oneself what things arouse it. What things promote it, what things keep it going. And then one might, by the skillful thing to do is to recognize these things and then try to be mindful enough to recognize when these arise and go away from them, turn away from them. Don't give them up, turn to something else. I mean, because of this one, we need something ready to turn to. You can use your practice. You can use Buddha, repetition of Buddha, or you can do some chant or other, anything. Just to turn away from it. The trouble is that raga tanha makes one think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And that, everything's all right with it, nothing at all. You don't realize that all that's there. It's like a wild tiger. Story of the bhikkhu who was fanning an arahant. And mind sort of thought about him going back to his wife, you see. and he thought, he was thinking while he was standing like this, that he, then we'd have a quarrel. And I'd hit her on the head and he'd hit the other. As they told the Buddha, he was afraid and he went away, you see. So they brought him to the Buddha. The Buddha said, and that's what happens when you don't control your mind.